Okay, and here we are. Welcome back. Trying to stay on top of this very big story coming out of Russia. And we'll be uploading a lot of headlines for you to look at, a lot of videos here in just a very few minutes. There's a lot going on there right now. It seems to be fairly understandable. Just briefly, the supreme commander, and certainly the commander of all the military, is Surovikin, and he's demanding that the Wagner troops obey the supreme commander, probably talking about Putin, but ultimately he's talking about him. Meanwhile, Prigozhin is calling for the Russian National Guard to join him. There was a firefight outside of Rostov on the way to Moscow. So apparently the Wagner musicians are on the way to Moscow. We'll keep tracking it for you all night and stay up late. Are you there, my friend? How are you?
I am. We made it through another week.
I don't know. It's amazing how quickly it goes. But we did. We did.
Yeah, time is very distorted now.
It's almost, it really is. We used to think, remember how when you were young, and all of you probably the same thing, we had a frame of reference, and it was usually a day. A day. Morning, breakfast, lunch, whatever. We never needed three meals a day. That was one of the biggest lies of all. Two good meals a day, and not heavy meals at that. And that's why people used to be thin. When I was a kid, we didn't have any fatties. We weren't any.
No.
I think I had one in my class one time, and he died. That's right. And he died. I think it was
really?
Eighth grade. And the poor kid died.
Mm.
He was a husky kid, and I forget why he died, but he died. Crazy. Now, if you go over on the right side of the homepage and look for Jeff and Erica and our massive archive of 2.5 years of work, and it has been an honor to be able to try to do this the right way, and we appreciate all of your support. It means a lot. We're doing it for you, not us. We're not in here for reasons of ego or money, none of that. We're doing it because it's the right thing to do. And I think that our perspective generally has been certainly as good as it can be given the odds we were against in the beginning to try to figure this out. We figured out a lot of it. Not all of it, of course, but a lot of it. And we've been very pragmatic on our recommendations. We have expressed reservations about some things. We don't know. We're very frank about that. And if you watch the so-called mainstream media, the mainstream alt media, which is probably 85 to 90%, maybe I'm being conservative, controlled opposition or controlled or people who really shouldn't be paid much attention to because they're just in there for reasons of ego and they're sitting on the work of others. They're borrowing other people's work, never giving them credit for it. And that happens to us a lot, which is okay as long as the word gets out. That's the game. So first up, I put the 2-minute clip with Professor retired and now the late Arne Burkhardt, a truly heroic figure. A wonderful man who began doing autopsies of the vaxxed dead and found out that sex, the act of human reproduction, can now kill the woman, and probably the inverse is true as well. But Arne Burkhardt found out, and you'll see it in that 2-minute video, found out that the testes in two of the people he autopsied that he checked no longer were manufacturing, nor did they contain any spermatozoa. No sperm. 100% spike protein. So if you're engaged in a reproductive physical sexual act, you are distributing a massive dose of spike protein into your female partner if you've been shot up. And now I'll say real quickly, even if you haven't been shot up, but you've been spiked, the same thing may be the case. That's why so many women are saying, gee, I went out with somebody and he didn't tell me he was injected, and I've had nothing but grief for months. We hear these commonly. So these women are being literally dosed with something that could kill them. Sex can kill now. That's the world we live in. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's true. There have been countless stories like that. There's many parents that are worried for their children, adult or of age children, that are grossly underestimating the risk. But, you know, how do you tell a 19 or 20-year-old that what they want to do or the person they're interested in is potentially deadly?
How do you talk to hormones?
Right.
And
especially you know, that the consequences are not always immediately apparent. Oftentimes they are, and in this case, I mean, a lot of times the women in particular are very sick within a day, very sick. But I've heard stories
even hours,
males.
Even hours, no? Hours for some women.
Sure.
They feel it right
yeah.
away. Go ahead, yeah. Sorry.
You know, you can transmit whatever this poison is just skin to skin. I mean, we've had many stories of people shaking hands very briefly or just a quick hug, maybe a brush of the cheek, and they are slayed for months. So you can just imagine exponentially how much more of a dose of this poison you're getting with intimate contact.
The question comes up a lot. Poison.
I think people are looking for someone to tell them, no, it's not that bad. Yeah, it is that bad.
It may be even worse than that.
And then, the question comes up, well, what if I use protection, like a condom? Will that help? Well, not really, because whatever it is skin to skin.
Let me remember, my book on AIDS, the smallest hole, latex is porous. It's got holes in it. If you magnify it enough, it's got holes in it. The smallest hole in latex is 50 times larger than the diameter of an HIV, a human immunodeficiency virus, 50 times larger than the virus. It's like shooting a BB gun through a tennis net. So condoms will not stop viral transmission. So how are they going to stop protein transmission?
Well, that's just it. This particular protein that we're dealing with, and we still don't really have it adequately characterized. It's supposed to be a spike, but now, as Ryan Cole said in his recent interview, they did the expression studies on the mRNA, meaning they took the mRNA and put it in a cell culture and had the cells express what was supposed to be the spike protein, but they weren't producing spike. They don't know what they were producing. So it's peptides, which are fragments of proteins. But there's many examples in nature where peptides are infinitely more toxic than a protein.
Mm-hmm.
You never underestimate a peptide. I mean, first of all, we have amyloidogenic peptides. Mm-hmm. And all it is just a string of amino acids. It's not even a full protein. And that can wreak havoc in your body, causing protein misfolding. There's other peptides in nature, like the ones produced by blue-green algae, microcystins, and BMAA. These are neurotoxins and liver toxins that, mm-hmm. You can inhale them and you're in trouble.
Wow. You know, I think you're so right, and you've been right so often. We've been in the dark, but we've been able to find a seam here and there and follow it through to a logical conclusion. And you've come up with so many things that are critically important. And 2.5 years, I have not seen any other platform that can come close. I'm not talking about us in the sense of ego here. I'm talking about the information that we have been able to gather and synthesize and present. And it's been very, very rewarding to get nice email from people who are very smart and who get it. This is a very convoluted, confused situation, and with utter intent, I might add. The controllers know what they're doing, okay? And what they're doing, basically, at this point, is laughing. They've injected almost 7 billion people. So what do they got to worry about? Nothing. It's game, set, and match. One shot, six shots. It doesn't matter. You, in all likelihood, if it was a competent vaccine with spike in it, you're in trouble. So I'm sorry to say it, but it's the truth. Okay, one other thing, and I'm going to bring Nurse Ann on here. We got together the other day and called around to what, three, four, I don't remember, several people who do thermography. That's kind of like an infrared picture of your body. Okay, shows heat, but it's a little bit different than that. And in your town will probably have a thermography center where you can get a thermograph taken of your whole body, your lower body. If you're a woman, you can get your breasts done. You can get your upper body done, whatever. And what the thermograph will do, it will show where some vascular irregularity or vascular distress or clotting is going on. And I think many of you have seen the picture on the homepage of the guy's legs. I think he came from Brazil. He said, I'm fine, nothing wrong with me. And he had a thermograph done of his legs, and he had clots everywhere. They were showing right on the thermograph. So we called several locations and talked. I guess I talked to the owners of three of them. Didn't we get the owners on the phone?
Yeah, oh yeah, yep. Yep.
All right, so we talked to the thermographers. You want to go ahead and take it from there and tell them what we found, if you can remember.
Well, the first one was already familiar with that image that had originated in Brazil of this vaxxed person that had gone to see a, I think it was a naturopath or something, but as part of the exam had a thermography or thermogram done of his body, full body, and was surprised to see the extent of clotting that was happening in his legs. So at least with that first thermographer we spoke to, she was already familiar with that. And she remarked that in her practice, she has seen, number one, an increase in people wanting to have a thermogram done to see if this is happening in them. And then she confirmed that she, too, is seeing some irregular patterns with their circulation. And the next two were, they disclosed a little bit less. Neither one of them seemed familiar with this problem that seems to be emerging with the vaxxed people. But they did say they are seeing an uptick in business with people wanting to have these scans done. So you can, I think the word is out. And I think a lot of these vaxxed people are truly frightened now by the information that's emerging. But we've essentially known since the beginning, the whole thing just stunk from the beginning, but you know, a lot of these people didn't want to believe it. And then there's those that were forced into making a very difficult decision. Keep their job or...
Right,
well,
right.
Basically well, to keep
the
their
one,
job.
The one lady, the first one, I think it was the first one, was probably the most well-informed of all of them. She said she does recommend that her patients who show vascular distress, shall we call it, in other words, clotting or evidence of possible clotting, that they have a D-dimer. And I said to her, I said, well, you know, the D-dimer will only work with a blood clot. It will not work with an amyloid clot. And I don't remember exactly what she said, but it was something like, what's an amyloid clot? She didn't know. So we told her, and, you know, good for her. She said, well, I'm going to look this up right away. I mean, this is her business. And she, after 2.5 years, still doesn't know anything about amyloid clots. Not that she's a professional X-ray, you know, analysis diagnostician. But she didn't know about amyloids.
I think there's...
And why the D-dimer won't work.
There's plenty of allopathic physicians that don't know that either.
I'm afraid you're right. But here's the point of all this, and we're going to bring Nurse Ann on. If you have any doubts about the current state of your health, go get a thermograph, and you'll at least see if you have signs, overt signs of clotting in the thermogram that you'll get. It's not terribly expensive. I think most health policies will cover at least part of it. It's a diagnostic tool, and you need it. So you might get one. But understand that most of these people don't know the difference between a blood clot and an amyloid clot. So you might want to take your knowledge with you Do your homework if you don't have it. But so that's the story on thermograms. We'll have more on this. They're apparently, as they say, business is good. They're doing very well. So the word's getting out.
They're sort of scratching their heads. Well, not the first one, but the other two that we spoke to, they were at a loss to explain why all of a sudden there's this interest in thermograms.
They didn't know. They're not connecting the dots. So at any rate, there you go. The two things that are important. Share the Arne Burkhardt video and keep thermography in mind. Let's say hello to Nurse Anne. If Nurse Anne is there, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Erica. Hello, Jeff. And congratulations on 30 years.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. It's it seems like only yesterday. It's crazy. All right.
That's something to be proud of.
Well, I don't do pride, but thanks. I appreciate that. Anne, are you still working in the same hospital as you were last time you were on?
I am. Still working in it. It's crazy. It's going.
All right. Tell us what's going on. Go right ahead. When you say it's crazy, it's off the chain. Tell us what's happening. What are you seeing? Your last visit was staggering. That was really an eye opener. That was amazing.
Yeah, and it's just incredible how sick the population is. I mean, I'm not surprised to see how sick the population are, but it's still heartbreaking to see how sick the population is. The ages go all over the map. I'm looking at 20-year-olds all the way up to 40, 50, 60, and 70, and 80 years of age. Sometimes we'll get an occasional 90-something-year-old mm-hmm. in there. But in regard to what you guys were just talking about, in regards to the tomography, in all of the electronic reports that we get regarding the diagnostic testing and such, you know, usually they'll say that there's some indication of stenosis or a hematoma or a clot formation or whatever the case may be, but there's something in there followed by, like, the CAT scan that was done or the MRI. But this was a very interesting case here. It was the only time I saw whichever doctor dictated this note. It was very interesting because it stood out like it was crazy. It was a red flag to me. And it was on a 52-year-old who presented with difficulties with speech and swallowing, and he had left facial weakness. So they had started to work him up for a stroke. And the CAT scan they did first, and that's typically what they would do, and it seemed to indicate that there was multiple vessels involved in the vertebral area, and then they said that the mid-cerebral artery bilaterally was affected. So they went on then to do an MRI because they wanted, you know, the MRI is the best diagnostic tool out there that the hospital will use. So they did the MRI, and it sure showed that he had an acute stroke in the on the right side, and that it had affected the dorsal medullary region. And there seemed to be multiple, you'll love this, micro hemorrhages, with the possibility of cerebral amyloid angiopathy. It's the first time I saw it in an MRI report.
Wow, you want to do that one more time, Anne? Cerebral amyloid, go ahead. That was very interesting.
Yes. So it had affected, it was basically saying multiple micro hemorrhages, meaning they had lots of indications for something like what seemed like blood clots, with possibility of a cerebral amyloid angiopathy. It was the first time in the whole time that I've ever, between all of this, that I've seen actually somebody put it in writing on an MRI report.
Finally, some truth. Wow, that is interesting.
So what's his prognosis? Do we know?
Well, he's very young. His speech was affected, so speech therapy is following him. He was affected for swallowing, so he bought himself a peg tube. So on admission, when he was first admitted from a week, May 15th, he was admitted, and then on May 17th, they placed a peg tube. So not even a week out, because he was in such a severe, he was such a severe case.
How young?
52.
Uh-huh. Right. Prime of life. Okay.
Prime of life, very little history on him. Prior to this, he was an active working young man.
Well,
and how many shots?
How many shots?
That's the thing. Per his work, he was mandated to have the shots, according to the family. So the family said he'd gotten the Pfizer 2 shots, and he had been boosted twice after that. So he had a total of 4 shots.
Mm.
And the reality of it is the family were asking if he'd be able to return to work, and as it turns out, he's not going to be returning to work, because it looks like the prognosis for him is that he's basically not going to be ever able to eat again like a normal person.
His speech has been devastatedly. They killed him.
Sorry.
He's basically dead.
Yeah.
Might as well be.
His speech was extremely affected, so he won't be able to perform his job at all. So, yeah, it's been that's been a very serious issue in regards to the level of strokes we're seeing, and they're worse than ever. I mean, it's not just you know how you would have seen years back, you would have seen. It would have been in one location. It's not in one location anymore. It's in multiple locations. And the typical treatment would have been, you know, you get them in, you try to give them the TPA, if it's a clot-originated, you know, to try get, you know, perfusion to the brain tissue. Well, a lot of people are outside of the window of that TPA, which is called a tissue plasminogen activator. It just breaks up the clot, for anyone who doesn't know. But you have to be at the hospital from the time that the symptoms start within 6 hours of that. If you miss that window after 6 hours, you're not getting the TPA. And then the risk comes with that. The TPA that they use in the emergency room is such a potent drug, it can cause massive bleeds as well. So it can go the other way. So now if we're treating a so-called clot, so to speak, and most people are calling them blood clots, and it's not actually a blood clot, what you're actually probably causing, you're going to end up causing more problems and causing a bleed.
Mm-hmm.
And so a hemorrhage. So I have a case that I did see last week. I don't have it in front of me, but that's indeed what happened. They ended up treating the patient in the emergency room with the TKA, and, of course, whatever clot it was, and we all can say basically, no, it's an amyloid clot. That's what really happened. But no, it's not in writing anywhere. But they ended up causing the person to hemorrhage, and then they had to try and reverse the TKA. And so that patient started bleeding massively everywhere.
Oh, boy.
Everywhere. Yeah. So now we have a bigger problem than we started out with, because now we have to try and control the bleeding in multiple areas. And
you're
I will tell you, this patient did not make it. They coded, and they did not make it.
Oh, boy.
Anne, that sounds almost like a hemorrhagic profile, maybe not caused by Ebola or any of the others, but that's horrific.
Yeah, and wow. and to do a little bit of defending on some of the doctors. I can't always defend them because there's a lot of them out there that have blood on their hands. So I mean, and a lot of nurses too. So I'm not, but there are physicians who are thinking they're treating for a blood clot, not knowing that they're dealing with something else, and the appropriate treatment. If they get patients that arrive in the inside of that six-hour window, is to treat them with that drug. So, and the drug, and they do actually have to sign a consent and everything for that to get that drug administered. A lot of patients don't get in that window anyway, but the ones that do, usually, if it is truly a blood clot, that would be a very effective treatment, and that is the course of treatment for that. But it does come with a huge risk.
Yeah, that's well established.
And Erica, what's going to cause such massive hemorrhaging like this?
I would think their vessel walls are weakened from, well, the last year or so, 2 years of, well, of pushing
no
that
doubt.
Thick blood around.
But to have them all fail like that is very interesting. That's a massive
failure. Well, don't forget, this is an endothelial disease.
Yeah.
Where the endothelium is damaged, it really isn't a surprise that you would get a rupture.
No, it doesn't, and that's the other
ruptures.
Thing. It doesn't surprise me either, because the other thing that they come in with, they're presenting with TVAs and are getting diagnosed with TVAs. They're documenting on the CAT scans and the MRIs that they have aneurysms.
Mm.
So there's a weakened vessel right there. That's a time bomb waiting to happen.
Right.
And sure enough, it does. It does. It's again the risk. Will the benefit outweigh the risk?
Are you expecting to see more of this? Because if we're right, if Erica's right, if you're right, this it becomes a chronic issue of the breakdown of the endothelial walls of all of your, basically all, any or all of your circulatory plumbing. And if the veins and blood vessels and arteries and their walls begin to fail, you may see a lot more cases like this of mass hemorrhaging.
Right. Yeah,
that's really alarming.
Think that could happen. I think it's definitely in this setting, it definitely could happen, because of what the few cases we've seen already. The other thing is that we're finding now. If you remember, we talked about the drug heparin. It's a drug that also thins the blood. So, when they come in with strokes and they have potentially rule them out for any potential hemorrhage event, that they'll want to keep the blood as thin as possible, so they'll put them on antiplatelets and they'll put them on heparin and stuff like that. And that's for two reasons. So that they don't, you know, throw a clot to another part of the body, for one. The other reason is that if they want to go in and do surgically remove the clot, they have to keep that blood as thin as possible. So they'll put them on heparin. Well, guess what I'm finding out with heparin now? They're having to actually, based on the blood levels that are coming back, we have to go higher and higher and higher on the drips, the heparin drips, titrating them to keep the blood thin.
Oh my gosh.
We've never had to do it. I'm here to tell you, I personally had to do that myself. This week we had a case where we just kept going up and up and up on that heparin drip. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, and the guy was getting frustrated. He was very, very frustrated and annoyed because he had wanted to go home, and he was alert and oriented, and we could not get his blood levels to a safe place. And so we were just going up and up and on the heparin drip.
Gosh.
We couldn't get his levels to, so, and then you would, I mean, literally, he was such a, he was a really difficult person to get any kind of blood work on, because you'd go in and you would actually try to get the blood from the vein. And of course, like I said before, and it's classic COVID blood, and it's still out there. It's just dark as can be. And then it starts draining through the tube, and it starts draining just a little bit, and then it stops. It's thick and black, and it just stops. So I was like, we're going to be forever poking this man, and we're never going to get this blood. So I actually told the physicians, I said, I think you probably should put a line in this guy, because we're never going to be able to draw this man's blood based on how what we see every time we try to get a level. And once you're on the heparin drip, you have to keep doing those levels every 6 hours. And the patients are very upset that they're getting woken up at ungodly hours in the morning, but that's just the way it is when you're on that drip. That is a very dangerous drug to be on, because it does set you up for bleeding. And especially if we're treating it for the wrong type of clot.
Boy.
And I want to get a little bit over to the cancer issue. We had an interesting 6 or 7 minute video with Ryan Cole we played, and he was saying that, and I have another one that's coming out, should be, in fact, I think it's up there now. Let me see. Hold on. The ambulance driver that you found. That was really interesting. There's an ambulance driver. I do. It's up there now. You'll see it. If you scroll down just a little bit, it'll say Diana West on Malone's defamation lawsuits. And right below that, it says ambulance driver's absolutely staggering report on the cancer explosion. He found out that the average number, and it was a heightened number at that, of cancer cases, I think breast cancer cases is what it was, 26,000 cases a year. That was 2 years ago. The current figure, I assume it's 2022, because we're only halfway through this year, was over 200,000 cases in 1 year, jumping from...
Actually, I think that was 2023 to date, because he made a point of saying, and we're only halfway through this year.
You're so right. You're so right.
So what's it going to be by December?
2022, let me reiterate, 2022... around 26,000 cases of breast cancer. I think it was breast cancer he was specifically focusing on.
Yes, yep.
And this year, half of a year, 6 months, 10 times that number of cases, over 250,000 cases. That video is up there right now. Mm-hmm. Ambulance driver's staggering report on cancer. All right, back to Nurse Ann. What are you seeing in terms of cancers in the hospitals now? These things are clearly running berserk in the public, and I'm sure many of these people are showing up at your doorstep. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, in regards to the cancers, we're seeing them. How it happens for us is they usually come in and they're getting, as I said, they're getting treated for something else, and then they all of a sudden, like, they'll present, like, say, with shortness of breath or hypoxia, which is, you know, again, they're just struggling to breathe, and their oxygen levels are significantly decreased, or their heart rates are through the roof, and then they do the workup. They'll do an x-ray, and they'll see something on the x-ray. Not sure what it is. The x-ray is just almost a useless tool, really, but they do it, and then they'll do the CAT scan, and then they'll find that they think it's pneumonia or whatever. And usually there is pneumonia in there. But once you start clearing up the pneumonia, you start to find out, like in the one case we had here, this guy was 34, and the one case was that once you cleared up the massive infection, because, you know, it's all consolidated on the x-ray, it's just all whited out and everything, you can't see anything. But once they cleared up the infection, and luckily they kept doing, like, repeat x-rays and stuff on him, and once that infection was cleared up, they found a mass in his lung, and they had to go tell this 34-year-old guy that they found a mass, and then they had followed up with the CT, and then they wanted to do a biopsy, and that came back as a cancer. So what, in answer to your question, is we find these out a lot of the times when we're working them up or treating them for something else. But there is a lot of problems with the cancers. There's lung cancer, brain cancer, and renal. So there's a lot of people. There's one case I can tell you about that we had to, his brain tumor was so complicated, we had to send him to a specialty cancer hospital because the physicians actually didn't think they could actually operate on him, or they certainly didn't want to. They didn't feel like they could give him the treatment that he needed. So they actually sent him to a specific cancer center to be treated. And this guy was 64. And what happened was he fell in Walmart, is what happened. He was out just out walking around. He fell in Walmart. Passerby people called the EMS. He was brought to the hospital. And then he apparently he did actually show that he'd been having some left-sided weakness as well. And he had a history of hypertension. These are always a lot of the histories are very similar. You'll see hypertension in there, hyperlipidemia, which is high cholesterol, and that kind of stuff. So he ended up having a stroke on top of what they found afterwards. So he tested positive for the stroke, and then while they were doing that, they came to find out this very complicated tumor. And he was only in our facility for about 4 days. While we were waiting to transfer him.
Well, when you say complicated tumor, that suggests metastasis already all over the place.
Well, the way it affected the brain, it had wrapped itself around a lot of vessels and stuff. The physicians, I mean, to be honest, if I'm honest with you, and I really think, if I was to say it honestly, I would say, yeah. He's not going to. He'll go on the operating table. He'll probably not make it.
Sounds like
because there's a lot of vessels involved, and the tumor is wrapped around a lot of the vessels, in the brain. I mean, it would be a very complicated surgery, and I think, being as young as he is, I think hopefully whoever the treating provider is. And an oncologist and surgery, I hope they're very honest with them, because this is a man who actually, he did actually recover from the initial stroke, and he was fully functional in that regard by the time he left our hospital. But he was walking. I used to walk with him in the hallways when I was doing rounds. He'd come around, he'd walk with me, and we'd talk. He has a wife, and he has three children, and he's a very, very good man. And he used to talk to me about different things. It's just nothing medical, really, because he just wanted to forget it. But the surgery is going to be very complicated, and I don't think he's going to make it if he goes on the operating table. Even if they do chemo or any radiation, if they try to shrink it,
right.
The tumor is all wrapped around all of those vessels.
All right.
It's a very aggressive tumor.
I understand. This suggests, again, these incredibly rapidly moving cancers, turbo cancers, as they're commonly called. These things grow so fast. How many codes a day now are you seeing? Is it going up?
Oh, yeah. We're multiple codes on multiple floors.
Oh, man.
There's always...
The morgue must be full.
The floors are packed. The ER is crazy. And we never have enough staff. And the hospitals have very rarely actual staff, where I'm working anyway. Permanent staff. A lot of the floors, again, as I said before, are getting staffed by travel nurses being brought in from other areas. So it's we have a nurse is actually from Nigeria. They're working with me. Now, that he is a phenomenal nurse. I will give him that. He's a phenomenal nurse. And but that's how desperate it is at this stage. Now, he has been living in the States for 2 years. But the other thing that's extremely frustrating about what I'm seeing on the reports, and this is the more concerning, because the physicians aren't either, they don't know, or they do know and they don't want to say. So, like, in regards to one of the cases I saw, this lady was very challenging because she was completely confused and she had had a huge stroke. But so she had an occlusion in her one of her brain vessels, and she got in in time to have the TPA, right? So then they did that, and then they did a thrombectomy where they actually removed the clot. They never actually documented what kind of clot it was, but this is the interest. They said currently embolic stroke of unknown cause. This is the most infuriating line for me to read, of unknown cause. Because they know. A lot of them know. And they're not saying. Or some of them don't know. But I used the example, I drew blood one night on a patient. I was like, let's do an educational thing. There's a girl who's working with me. She's a phenomenal nurse. And she's got a really interesting life. But I said, we talked about the amyloid clots, me and myself and her on the unit. And there was other nurses there. And I said, okay, let's take a look. I go, and then we pulled out blood from a tube and we put it on a little paper plate. And I was like, okay, so this is a blood clot. Everybody agrees, right? And so we're like, and you take a spoon and you can mush it up and it falls apart, right? And then when I was drawing somebody's blood through, a catheter, we had a centrist venous line catheter, something white came out, right? So I kept this, right? I kept that because it had gone into the syringe. And then I put it beside the other one, and I said, now, it had been covered in blood, right? But it was, you could still see there was something white in nature there. So I said, Bri, is this a blood clot? I said to one of the girls who, you know, they don't really know what they don't know, right? I said, is this a blood clot? And she goes, yeah, it is. And I go, okay, take the spoon and try to break it up. And then as she's trying to do it, she's pushing down and the blood falls off the white piece and she can't break them. And she goes, what the hell is that? And I go, wow. Exactly.
Wow, after all this time, they just don't know.
Yeah.
Well, good on you for educating them. This is not D. Dimer territory anymore.
We're past that.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
No.
Yeah, way past
that. The D. Dimers at this point just confirm that something is going on in the body, that there's blood clotting. But that's blood clotting in addition to whatever else is going on. So it's a mute point in many ways. The nurses don't know what they don't know. But there's a lot of physicians who do know. Like the vascular surgeons, they're pulling spots out of these people every day of the week. So they see what they see. They know what they know, and they're not saying it.
Right.
It's not in any of the documentation.
Yeah.
You read a vascular report on any of those patients, you'll never see. It's always that they removed a blood clot. They'll say a clot.
Patient goes in, has a clot removed. Patient goes home. Are patients coming back a few weeks later with other clots?
Oh yeah. That's the other side of the coin. That's it. That they'll get treated. They're put on anticoagulants for the rest of their lives. By the way, and then they're at home, and all of a sudden, I don't know, they get lightheaded or dizzy, they're on the floor, they fall, and here you go, they're back at the hospital again. A lot of them go back up to the hospital as a result of a fall. That's usually what happens. They end up...
That's your cue, Erica.
Yeah.
Fall. EMT.
Oh, yeah. With the EMT calls, several a day now.
Falls.
Several a day. And then, you know, in odd places. One was in a supermarket today. The person just dropped.
They're just dropping, Anne. Just boom, down.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I see it. I see it in the reports. The reports, when they come in, I see it for myself. And, like, they'll say the patient was here last month for a CVA, now has another second CVA. Like, there would have been a time where if you heard a patient had a CVA or something like that, once in the year, you'd be like, okay. But within a month of having the first CVA, that's a little bit much. And, like, they're documenting, they're coming in, this is the third time this patient has stroked. I mean, I can speak personally to that myself. We've had this ourselves, but for a different scenario. But, yeah, I mean, the fact that people are stroking so much should be raising huge red flags, and it isn't. And the other side of the coin is they're claiming it's the fall, you know, but then when they look at the patient goes, well, I was fine prior to the fall. So then what brought the fall on? You have to look at it from what was the event that brought that fall on first. And then now everybody's on a heart monitor because everybody's coming in with arrhythmias. Everybody's heart is affected in some way or another. And so they're put on the anticoagulants for that too, to prevent them from throwing any blood clots. Right? A lot of atrial fibrillation, and I talk about this a lot because the heart doesn't pump correctly, so it quivers and it allows for the development of a blood clot that may break off and go somewhere else, like in the heart or the lungs or the brain. So it's a massive setup for, you know, to bring on a huge stroke. So everybody is on the heart monitor. And it's horrific what's happening. It's just, and they're young. Like, for me, I personally, like, as I said, 20, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds, 60-year-olds are young. They're still young people. They're out and still working. These are working people. Right. And most of them are trying to support their family. So it has a huge reaction on families when the only person working is now having massive strokes and then looking at possibly leaving the hospital, not going home, mind you, but going to like a subacute facility. And for some unfortunates, it's probably a nursing home. They're not going to get any better. And that 34-year-old didn't get any better. He's looking at long rehab, you know, it's just sad, really. It's heartbreaking to see how sick people are. And I don't know how to make it any better anymore because the damage is already done.
Let me ask you a question, Anne. We're almost out of time here. In fact, we are. When you go out and about today, and all of you out there, if you're walking out to go to the store, you see people, wherever you may be, a lot of those people, and in our opinion, are sick. They've got problems. They don't wear a sign on their back saying, I'm sick with this, or I have a clot there. They're not talking about that openly, but they are sick.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people out and about are not well. Am I correct?
Yes, they're not well. They think they are, but they're not. They're a walking time bomb. What is it? It's only a matter of time.
Got it. Yeah. All right, last question. Erica, go ahead. What, Anne?
Yeah, there's one case I wanted to talk about, but it's in regards to, it's a very sad case, and I just wanted to talk to you about it a little bit. It's this young man, he's 50, and he had diabetes in his family, so he got diabetes. But then he ended up having chronic kidney disease, ended up having seizures, and then he came to our hospital with altered mental status with confusion. They come to find out that he had, this is very sad because this is so horrific what happened. He ended up, they found he had a soft necrotizing infection in one of his legs. And he, if you can't believe what I'm about to, he underwent a left lower extremity guillotine through the knee amputation on 4/14 of this year. So they cut off his leg above the knee.
They call that a guillotine procedure?
Guillotine. Huh. I couldn't believe it. I was like, you might as well just say you butchered the poor guy. Yeah. Guillotine. Yeah. Left lower extremity guillotine. That's what it was called. And then he ended up with a massive infection, continued with the massive infection. And he ended up with a blood count I had never seen as high as it was. They called infectious disease on the case. They came in. They were hitting him with every antibiotic under the sun. He got so many antibiotics that now, if he ever gets another infection, he probably will not be able to fight it off. He ended up developing seizures followed after that. And then to add insult to injury, when they did the CT scan after he had the seizures, he now had a lacunar infarct in his right thalamus. So he ended up with a stroke. And now neurology was consulted. And now neurology was on the case. Now he started having more complications with confusion, and it just was completely, he became another different human being. He was agitated and really difficult to work with. This is a man who walked in the door, alert and oriented, with all of his limbs.
My gosh. How many shots?
Well,
oh, he was up to number 5 on the vaccines.
So, heavily boosted, thoroughly vaxxed.
Yeah.
In other words, he's toast. And we have to run. We're way over time. Thank you very much for being here. But more than that,
thank you, Ann.
Thank you for trying to make these sick people feel a little bit better. And you're so kind. You must seem like an angel to many of them. So keep it up. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Anytime. We'll talk again.
All right.
Okay, Ann. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Well, there you have it again. That is a direct face-to-face look at reality. These poor people, and many of you listening have taken these injections, and you know many friends of yours, maybe some have died, but you know that many of them are ill, and you may be ill. And this is absolutely horrific. This is what the world elite has done to the people. Don't ever forget that. This is a biological weapon of death, and that's exactly what it's doing. And it has so many different pathways to get there. It's frightful. I can't even imagine doing what she does. Can you? I can't.
No. It's, you know, and the fact that people are still taking these shots.
I know. I don't know. I mean, are people so damn dumb that we're not going to miss them? I know that they're captives of the mainstream media. I know that that's their reality. But this has got to stop. All right, we have to go. Thank you, partner. Talk soon. Great job.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Okay, we'll be right back with more.